Here we are again on a Monday after a busy, busy week for the Blue Jackets. Some good, some bad. Well, actually, yesterday, some ugly, to be honest with you. But another big week is ahead, and it's time for me to talk to you. Welcome to the Blue Jackets Monday Mailbag. Bob McElligott with you, taking your questions. You can get those questions to me one of two ways. The first way is you could just go on X, formerly Twitter, and you could send your question to me at Bobby Mac Sports. The other way that you could have your question on this show is if you are with me live on X Spaces right now and you'd like to ask that question, you could do it. I'll answer it. It is just that simple. Well, as I said, it was a busy week for the Blue Jackets, a busy week at home, as a matter of fact. The Blue Jackets played three home games in 4 days, which is a bit unusual, but that's what they did. It started on Thursday night when they took on the Ottawa Senators at Nationwide Arena, had a two-goal lead in the third period. The Senators made that lead disappear. The game eventually went to overtime, and then Ottawa was able to win it in the shootout. Claude Giroux going with the not very much seen slap shot in the shootout to get the win for the Ottawa Senators. So the Blue Jackets had to settle for 1 point in that game. Then Saturday, the San Jose Sharks came to town. Second meeting of the year between the Blue Jackets and the Sharks. And the Blue Jackets did what they did the last time they met San Jose. They beat them. They beat them 4-2. That was a game that the Blue Jackets, they had a lead. They got up 3-1 in the third period. San Jose made it a one-goal game, and then the Blue Jackets were able to get the empty netter to seal the deal. That was a big game for four people, and the four people are the three on the top line. Johnny Gaudreau and Boone Jenner each had a goal and an assist, and Alex Nylander had two goals and an assist for the Blue Jackets in that game. And what a surprise Alex Nylander has been for the Blue Jackets. Coming in here a couple of weeks ago in a trade with Pittsburgh for Emil Bemstrom, it looks like it's kind of a throwaway type of a deal, not to disrespect anybody in it, but look, Emil Bemstrom over the years hasn't really produced offensively for the Blue Jackets, not the way that they thought that he would when they first brought him into the organization. So they send him to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh sends a guy that was a former first-round pick who had been with two teams previously and never found a foothold in the Penguins organization. But the Penguins also did throw in that sixth-round draft pick, which could move up if Emil Bemstrom were to score six goals by the end of the season. That's looking pretty unlikely right now. I mean, he got the first goal in his first game as a Penguin, and he hasn't done anything since when it's come to scoring goals. So anyway, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Alex Nylander, that's really the focus of this, because the Blue Jackets, they seem that they have gotten a steal in this deal, because Nylander came in and he did something that no other Blue Jackets player has ever, ever done, and that is score eight goals in his first 11 games as a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Nobody's done that, but he did it. And so, he's making a name for himself very quickly, and he's really trying to establish a position with the Blue Jackets, not just for now, but, you know, going ahead, because at the end of the year, they've got to make decisions on a lot of guys, and Nylander is one of those guys. So can he find a foothold here? Can he become a part of this organization? Is he a player that they're looking for? Is he a guy that would stay on that line with Boone Jenner and Johnny Gaudreau? What happens when you add back Adam Fantilli and Kent Johnson, two guys that are out basically for the year, as you look at it right now? Kent Johnson definitely for the year. Adam Fantilli, the games are dwindling, and he's still not recovered from that laceration he had to his calf. So what happens when players like that get back into the lineup? Does he still have a place there? These are the kind of things that the organization has to sort through and figure out and do it without a general manager. Like maybe what he's doing now is going to be assessed by a new general manager. I guess I shouldn't say maybe. It definitely will be. And then that person is going to decide the fate of not just Alex Nylander, but of everybody that is playing on this team right now. So, but Nylander has put himself into the conversation. It not just injected himself into the conversation. I mean, he has jumped in, not jumped, he's diving in head first just to get noticed and make a name for himself here, and he's done a really good job of it. So he had a great game on Saturday. That top line was terrific on Saturday. The other guy, because I told you four players, the other guy that was terrific was goaltender Daniil Tarasov. And this guy is just lighting it up over the course of the last couple of weeks. I mean, he is healthy now. That's very easy to see. He's moving well. He's reading shots well. He's really seeing the puck. He is giving up less rebounds. His teammates are clearing the ones away that he does give up. He has been terrific. And really, that's a big boost for this team, because we've talked all year about the goaltending situation. And I'm not talking about whether people are happy or they're not happy. I'm talking about the actual play. What do you have? Do you have a goaltender in your organization or don't you? That's kind of been the question for the Blue Jackets throughout the course of this year. Elvis has struggled the last couple of years. Yes, he's been better this year, but is it better enough based on his salary? Would you like to find a way to move him? Does he want to be here? All those things, you know, all the stuff we've been dealing with the entire year, you know, on and off the ice in that situation. For Tarasov, it's pretty much been, this guy can't stay healthy. He's been injured, it seems, every year. He was injured this year, missed training camp, missed the beginning of the season. Really has taken him a lot of time to get locked back in, but he is very locked in right now, and it is very noticeable how locked in he is right now. So that is a really positive sign for the Blue Jackets, because they need some stability at that position. When you're building a championship team, where are you starting? You're starting in goal. You're moving out to the blue line, out to the forwards, okay? So what do you have in goal? I think that has been a big factor for the Blue Jackets to figure out exactly what they have there. Daniil Tarasov is trying to make that picture a lot more clearer for them the way he has played the last few weeks. Now he's got a couple of weeks left. He has to keep on playing like that and finish the season extremely strong. I'll give you that. That's a fact of the matter. Yesterday was a different story from the Saturday game. Yesterday, the Winnipeg Jets came to town. The Blue Jackets played them well in the first period, and then the second period came. And I had somebody ask me today, what did you see in the second period of that game? Well, I saw a playoff team that is very talented, very big, very strong, flex its muscle, and do it against a team that was playing its second game in as many days, its third game in 4 days. And that's not an excuse. That's a fact. But they are a bigger, stronger, built for the postseason team than the Blue Jackets are, and they just showed it in the second period. They got 4 goals in the second period of the game. They extended their lead to 5-0. It was pretty much over right there. The Blue Jackets got one early in the third period, but that's all they could muster. And 6-1 is the final score in that game yesterday against the Winnipeg Jets. So that one, to me, it's kind of a one-off. And I would not have been surprised had the Blue Jackets won that game yesterday, because of the way they've played against big playoff caliber teams as of late. You look at last week, Vegas Golden Knights, they beat them 6-3. Then Edmonton comes in a couple of days later. They beat them. And Edmonton's more speed and skill than it is big and tough. And they were able to win both of those games against good teams. And you look throughout the course of the year, whenever they've been playing really good teams, they've had really good games. Look at the way they played the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 3 meetings this year that they had with them. So it wouldn't have surprised me if the Blue Jackets were able to come up with something and gut it out and get a win yesterday, but Winnipeg was just not having it. And you've got to understand, the Jets, over the course of their previous 7 games, had gone back and forth, wins and losses, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. And they need to get some kind of a run going as they build for the playoffs. They started yesterday in third place in the Central Division, and they were able to jump up to the top spot by getting the 2 points by the end of the game. So they've got to build something right now, and they had just started a road trip in the East, 5 games in the East, and they were leaving here yesterday, going to New York to take on the New York Rangers. So if you're going to take on the New York Rangers, who right now are just steamrolling people on the schedule, it doesn't matter who it is, they're running over people like they're not even there. So if you're going to go and play them and compete against them, and it's going to be a playoff-type atmosphere game, you've got to be playing your best hockey going into that game. So I think for the Winnipeg Jets yesterday, there was a determined game plan and a mindset to be playing as well as they possibly can, because they wanted to do that throughout the 60 minutes yesterday. They want to go into New York on a roll feeling confident about themselves. They had come off a win in their previous game, but it was against the Ducks, and it was 6-0. And the Ducks are wallowing like the Blue Jackets are near the bottom of the standings. So they felt that they should have won that game. I'm sure they felt that they should have won yesterday's game. But the way they played yesterday, especially after the first period when the Blue Jackets were right there with them, and then they separated themselves in the second period. Now, the Blue Jackets players said that they kind of backed off in the second period where they shouldn't have backed off. And okay, I know that's true to an extent. But again, I saw the flexing of the muscles of a big, fast, strong playoff team that was looking to make a statement. And that's exactly what they did with that 6-1 win yesterday at Nationwide Arena. So that wraps up the weekend that was. Now the Blue Jackets are headed out starting today on an 11-day, 5-game road trip that will take them literally all over the map. Tomorrow night, the Blue Jackets will be in Detroit. They'll take on the Red Wings. And then they go to Colorado for a game on Friday, Vegas for a game Saturday, Arizona for a game next Tuesday, and back to Pittsburgh for a game next Thursday. I don't know who drew that up. I don't know if somebody lost a bet before they drew it up. I don't know if they were intoxicated when they drew it up. It's a weird road trip, but that's the trip on the schedule, and that's where the Blue Jackets are going to be going over the course of the next week and a half. So that is the outlook. Once again, if you're with me live on X Spaces and you want to ask your question, you can go ahead, request to be a speaker. I'll bring you up and you can do that. Or if you've already sent your question on X, formerly Twitter, I can get to it like that. And I will do that right now with T. Hayes, who says, with some of the players being sent away via trade, what other players or style of players need to be brought in to bring success to the team? Also, any thoughts on who the new general manager may be? I'll start with that first. Radio silence on that. Nothing. I mean, I don't even see anything being speculated by the insiders as to who the Blue Jackets might be talking to. John Davidson was very honest when he said that they've gotten a million people reaching out to them. A million is not the real total, but it's a lot. A lot of people have reached out either on their own, through a representative, somebody else has called on their behalf, their agent, whatever the case may be. So a lot of people have looked into it. What that number is, I have no idea. But it has been completely hush-hush as far as if they've spoken to anybody. And I'm sure that they have spoken to people, but I'm sure it's all preliminary conversation because this is not going to get done over the course of the next month before the season ends. This is going to go beyond the end of the regular season. So it's too early to get that speculation right now. They're just starting to sort through, I would think, all the names and have maybe some preliminary conversations, and then you'll start to pare it down into the real group that you're going to select from. So I don't know who that's going to be, but what style of players need to be brought in? Well, again, it depends on what kind of a game that you want to play. I think, you know, ideally you want to play a fast game, and the Blue Jackets have the players to do that. They can skate. Despite what happened yesterday in the second period, they can skate, and they can skate well. And that's how they really compete with some of these more talented teams, is through their ability to move and get to the puck and put pressure on defensemen and all of that stuff. So they can skate. So you'd like to play a quick game, but you also have to be stronger. Now, whether that means that you have players on your roster who need to get stronger, as they've talked about all year with Kent Johnson, or if you have to go out and get players that are just a different style of player, just like these Western Conference players. I mean, there is disparity in many ways between the East and the West. There's no doubt about it. When I think of the Toronto Maple Leafs, what do I think of? I think of Austin Matthews and John Tavares and Mitch Marner and William Nylander and just scoring a whole bunch of goals. A lot of skill, a lot of scoring is what I think of. What do I think of when I think of the teams in the West, like the Jets that we just saw? Yeah, they had a lot of scoring yesterday, but they are big. I mean, you got Adam Lowry out there taking a bunch of faceoffs. He's 6'5". When he lines up against Dmitry Voronkov, there is a noticeable size comparison there. So many times Voronkov lines up against guys in the Eastern Conference where there's a noticeable size difference, where he is bigger than the other guy. You know, so it's just, there still is just a different style of hockey between the East and the West, so it seems. Now, maybe Edmonton's an exception to that. Maybe they're playing the East Coast style or the Eastern Conference style in the Western Conference, but you know, I think that you just need to get tougher, and I don't mean fighting tough. I mean, and I'm not talking about grinder tough. You need to get players that are, you know, they can battle. They can hold on to the puck. Think back to when Artemi Panarin was here. Wasn't a big guy, But, man, you could not get the puck away from that guy, right? So that's the key. How do you possess the puck? How do you keep the puck? Strong guys in that regard. Strong guys who have a scoring knack, who can hold on to the puck and create and finish. And you have some of those guys on your roster right now, and you have some other guys that you hope are going to develop into those kind of players on your roster too. So, you know, that's what they're looking for, and they're looking to piece it together and get some synergy with it, just like they have with Johnny Gaudreau and Boone Jenner and Alex Nylander. Who would have known that the chemistry was going to be as good as it is between those three guys? Sometimes you just got to mix it and match it until you figure it out. And that's why I say you might have some of these elements already. Maybe they're not in the right place and you have to get them into the right place. Or maybe you just don't have the element and you might move somebody out to bring that element in by getting somebody else. And maybe when it's all said and done, you end up having to move people that you or I may not be excited about and might be head scratching and say, well, that guy's got a lot of skill. Why would you move that guy for something else? But again, it's about roster building now. It's not about acquiring skill and talent. Now you've got that. Now it's about roster building and figuring out how to put it together so that you can not only win, but you can win consistently. So you can not just get into the playoffs, so that you can make runs in the playoffs. That's where the Blue Jackets are at this point. And they're still going to acquire talent. Obviously, they're going to miss the playoffs, and they're going to get another high pick again this year. How high? Who knows? We'll see how it all shakes out. But they're going to get another talented player that they can add to that stockpile come the end of June this year. Matt says, how many of the Winnipeg Jets from yesterday's game are a product of Pascal Vincent's development coaching in the American Hockey League? If Vincent remains as head coach with the new general manager, is the way the Jets play something we can look forward to as Blue Jackets fans, or do we have different team talent? Well, Matt, this is kind of what I was talking about just a moment ago. Yeah, the talent is, it's a little bit different. There's no doubt about that, but it's about the system and the play. And I think what you saw from Winnipeg, the way that they swarmed to the puck, and they did. As you saw, if you were there yesterday or if you watched it yesterday, when you saw a Blue Jackets player get the puck, you saw at least one, most times two, Winnipeg Jets being around that guy and putting pressure on him. That's what you saw, because that's what they do when they're playing their system, and they do it very well when they're playing their system. So that's, I would expect to see that. I would expect to see that style of play. And a lot of those guys, honestly, were with Pascal Vincent in the American Hockey League, and he helped to develop them there. So that is, you know, that's probably the style that he would like to play. Do you have all of the right players to play that style right now? Not all of them, but you got a lot of them. And again, when you look at the Blue Jackets and when they're doing what they do best and when they're skating as well as they can skate, that's what they're doing. They're pressuring teams, and they're getting in there, and they're jarring pucks loose and all that stuff. So there are a number of guys that he did help to cultivate within that Winnipeg Jets system. And I'm sure, because you see the success that you can have when you have the personnel to play the way that they do, I'm sure that that is the way that he would like his team to play and bring it every night, just like that. Again, if you're with me live on X Spaces and you want to ask a question, all you have to do is request to be a speaker. I'll bring you up, and you can ask that question. If you are too shy to do that and you just want to go on X and put your question to me there, you just can find me at Bobby Mac Sports. It's very simple. So the Blue Jackets do have injuries right now, and I've got to think here, how much am I noticing the injuries? I mean, yes, I am to an extent. All right. I'm not going to say that everything is exactly the same, but I am going to tell you that yesterday the lone goal in the game was scored by Brendan Gaunce. Brendan Gaunce is just up from Cleveland. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise that Brendan Gaunce scores a goal in the National Hockey League. He's done it before. He is a former first-round pick. He's a guy that's been around for a long time. He's played in North America. He's played in Europe. He's come back. When he is in Cleveland, he's the captain of the Cleveland Monsters. He is a very experienced player, a very experienced player who has good leadership skills, okay? So when he is in Cleveland, he's playing on the top line, and you can put down Carson Meyer also playing in a top-line position in Cleveland, putting up points, scoring goals, all that stuff, okay? Well, these two guys, when they come to Columbus, they know they're not going to play on the top line. No chance. Just not the way it's going to be. They know what their role is going to be immediately, and their role is energy guys. They're going to play on the fourth line, and they are going to be energy guys. And that can be a tough shift in mentality to make, quite honestly. And the fact that these guys have done it like they have in the last couple of games has been pretty impressive, quite honestly. Because I think once you get accustomed to being a scorer, it's hard to shift gears and go back to knowing that you're probably not going to score much and your ice time is going to go from 24 minutes to 10 minutes. And in those 10 minutes, your job is to hit everything in sight, try to force turnovers, and if you get the opportunity to score a goal, I hope you do, because we could really use scoring from the bottom six. That's the role, right? And Gaunce and Meyer have done a really good job of coming in and doing just that. We had Carson Meyer on the inside edge last week. Joe DiShelley and I talked to him, and I asked him about that situation because you want the ice time. You want to show you're a scorer and all of that. But Carson was very honest. He said, listen, I know what my role is here, and I know that I have to affect the game in other ways. So he said, for me, I kind of like it because when I'm playing 20-plus minutes, that takes a lot of energy. I can't run around and hit everybody on every shift or I'll be exhausted before the game's over and I just won't be as effective. But here, if I'm playing 8 to 10 minutes, then I can take all of that energy every time I'm on the ice and I can just let it out. So he enjoys that style of play, and you can see it by the way that he does play. But my whole point to this is, if you look at the Blue Jackets' fourth line, it was really clicking with Justin Danforth and Matthew Olivier on the wings and Sean Corrali in the middle, right? It was providing exactly what Pascal Vincent needed from that unit. They were out there. They were responsible. They were providing energy. They were getting the secondary scoring when the team needed them to get that scoring. So they were doing all of those things. All of a sudden, two-thirds of that line is out. Corrali hurt. He's out week to week. Danforth, concussion. He's out for an undetermined amount of time. So you lose two-thirds of that line. And the fact that that line hasn't changed whatsoever is pretty impressive to me. And it's a big tip of the cap and a big compliment, I think, to Brendan Gaunce and Carson Meyer for coming in there. And Matthew Olivier said that after the game on Saturday night. He said, we just keep rolling the way that we are without those two guys. And Olivier is a part of that because he's getting a chance now to get minutes, play regular minutes and all that stuff. And I think he's done a good job of what he has done. When he's been asked to fight, he's been excellent. But it's more about playing the regular shifts and carrying the puck and getting the puck on net and finishing off your checks and all that stuff. He's been really good at that. So he's finally getting a full opportunity to play regular shifts here, which there were many times this year he didn't get that chance because, you know, there were other guys that they were trying to play and maybe see if they could make them, attractive to another team to make a trade or whatever. So there were many times this year Matthew Olivier has had to, as John Davidson likes to say it, know your seat on the bus. And today your seat, unfortunately, is going to be a healthy scratch because we need to do some things. And he just kept on working and waited for the chance. Now he's got it and he's playing really well. But if you would have told me Sean Corrali and Justin Danforth are both going to come out of your lineup, but don't worry, you're still going to have pretty much the same effort, production, whatever, out of that fourth line, I would have said, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know. That's two really smart guys, number one, two guys that really know how to play their positions and play that way. That's two guys taking them out of that lineup. That's a lot of experience that you're taking out of there. But Carson Meyer and Brendan Gaunce have done a really nice job coming in and filling that role for the Blue Jackets. So it's kind of unchanged on that line. What has changed, of course, is, the Russian line is no longer together, and the big part of that is Yegor Chinnikov is still out of the lineup. He's day-to-day with an upper body injury. He's missed the last couple of games, and the Blue Jackets miss him. They miss his shot. I think if he came back right now, that he would be hard-pressed to get back on that line with Boone Jenner and Johnny Gaudreau, just based on the production they're having with Alex Nylander there. But the other thing to me is, And I don't know if you've noticed this. I talked about it yesterday. I talked about it off the air, but I'll talk about it on record right now. If you look at Kirill Marchenko, I think there's something different about Kirill Marchenko, and I'm not saying that it's a good thing, and I'm not saying it's a terrible thing either, but Marchenko, I think I looked yesterday, he had 5 shots in the last 4 games. If you go back to when he was a healthy scratch against Pittsburgh, I just don't think he's shooting the puck as much as he did before. I feel he's trying to make plays all the time. Now, yesterday, he did get some shots toward the net, and I think he had one really good one that may have hit the post or just went wide or something like that. But I just feel that he's not shooting the puck the way that he was shooting the puck earlier in the season. So I don't know if after that healthy scratch, if whatever was talked about that he wasn't doing that caused him to get scratched, I don't know if that has forced him to change his game. But it's a little bit surprising to me. I just think that he is, you know, he's playing with Cole Sillinger and Alexander Texier, and you know, Texier's been much more noticeable since he's got on that line. But Marchenko has, to me, he's fallen off. And I know he's a streaky guy, and he's the kind of player that if he gets one goal, then he can get 2, 3, 4. I get it, but he's going to be hard-pressed in getting that goal until he starts shooting the puck a little bit more, I think. So I don't know what you think. I don't know if you see the same thing, but, you know, that's what I've been seeing when I watch Kirill Marchenko. I've been watching him come down the ice, and he's carrying the puck, and a lot of times he's coming down that wing. It looks like he has speed, and I'm expecting him to take the shot, and then all of a sudden he's trying to get it over to Sillinger, and sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. You know, it's just – I don't think it's necessarily a chemistry issue with Sillinger. I think it's just he may be thinking more than he needs to think. Maybe he just needs to come down and shoot the puck a little bit more. I don't know. But, you know, there was a good thing going there for a while with Nylander and Sillinger and Texier, and then you had Marchenko along with Voronkov and Chinnikov. And Voronkov's another guy that looks a little bit lost without those two guys. And I know he hasn't played with them all year long. I know there's been mixing and matching, but, you know, right now you've got Voronkov out there playing with Michael Puthia, who just came up from Cleveland because of these injuries, and it just looks like, you know, that line is kind of searching for what they are, what they have, what they need to do. And, you know, again, that's going to happen when you get a lot of call-ups. On the blue line, Jake Christensen got called up the other day. I think Jake has been fine in the 2 games that he has played. I was a little bit surprised that they brought up the left-handed shot, not a right-handed shot. However, in all fairness, if you are the best player in the American Hockey League at a certain position where there is a need in the National Hockey League, you should be the player that's called up. And that was what the feeling was with Jake Christensen, that he was the best defenseman on the Cleveland Monsters. He deserved the opportunity to come to the National Hockey League, so he is here and he is playing. That does screw things up a little bit, right? Because you don't have a left shot and a right shot on each pair. Now, I asked Steve McCarthy, who coaches the defense yesterday, about that. And I said, hey, do we in the media, I'm not in the media, but I got to say it like that because I'm asking questions and I'm, you know, I'm with the team, but just saying, just laying it out there. When you're analyzing and breaking down, do us that do that analyzing and breaking down, how's that? Do we put too much emphasis on having a right shot and a left shot on every pair? Does it matter? And he goes, yeah, you probably worry about that a little bit too much. He said, first of all, every defenseman will tell you that they can play either side. And that may be true, that may not be true, but they want ice time. So if you go to somebody and say, hey, can you play on the left side even though you're a right shot? They're going to say yes because they want the opportunity to play. Now, there are different things that different challenges when you play on your offside, just the way you receive the puck and the way you distribute the puck and the way it comes off the boards and all of that. I've talked about that the last couple of years with Nick Blankenberg when he was up here about moving over to the left side as a right-handed shot and how you've got to approach things and, you know, be aware of how the puck's going to come off the boards and what adjustments you have to make and turn your body to be able to get the puck where you want it to be and to make the passes that you want to make, all that stuff. But, you know, the fact of the matter is they had Zach Werenski playing on the right side on Saturday. They had Jake Bean playing on the right side a bit yesterday. So they're just trying to, you know, mix it and match it and see what's going on and, you know, figure out what they want to do from there. So, but look, I'm all about throwing the lefty-righty thing out the window if a guy is deemed to be the best player in Cleveland, like Jake Christensen was. If that's the case, bring up the best player. Because if you don't, what kind of a message are you sending to that player? What kind of message are you sending to everybody else on the team? So it's good that Jake is here. I have no problem with Jake being here. I think he's the kind of guy that if he got a chance to play in a regular role, probably as a third pair defenseman, that he would be fine, that he would just kind of gain the experience to grow into it. Because what's he played, 30-some National Hockey League games? You know, he's the guy that wasn't drafted, and the Blue Jackets went out and they got him, and he's had the opportunity to play some games in the National Hockey League, so good on him. But I think he's fine, and I don't know how long Adam Boqvist is going to be out with the injury that he suffered on Thursday night, so we will wait and see when it comes to all of that. Rinketic has sent me a message on X. It says, can someone like Eric Tulski be our next general manager, or have you heard about someone else? Well, I addressed this earlier, and Eric is what with the Carolina Hurricanes as an assistant GM. That kind of guy's had his name out there for names in the past. So, you know, absolutely, could it be? Like, the question is, could someone like that be the next general manager? Yeah, sure, absolutely. Anybody could be the next general manager as it stands right now. And there are a lot of names like his that have been tossed around with different teams over the course of the last couple of years. And I'm sure that once these lists are starting to be pared down, that you'll probably hear a lot of those names once again being involved in this job. You don't get your name into a search by accident, right? I mean, and especially if your name appears in one GM search and then you never hear about a person again, that's one thing. But when you appear in this search and then this search and this search, that means that, you know, there's something tangible there and you're looking for the right fit, and the team is looking at you as being the right fit. So, again, I think that you'll hear a lot of names like that as it goes on, of people that have been in talks with other teams or been maybe not even in talks or have been in consideration to some extent by other teams. That's just an absolute no-brainer. So we'll see. We'll see. And as I said, it really looks like, I guess this could heat up near the end of the season, but it all depends on who they want to talk to. I mean, there might be people that are with playoff teams and aren't going to be able to interview or aren't going to get permission to interview until after they're done with the playoffs and stuff like that. So I just think it's going to be a long process. And it's obvious it's going to be a long process because it's been so silent about it. Because there's not a rush to get it done right now. We'll get to that time. There will be a time when all of a sudden there will be a rush to get it done, but by the time you get to the rush, you already have a really good idea of where you're going and what you're looking to fulfill with the person that is going to be in that role. So they're not in a rush right now by any means to get that done, because there's plenty of time and there's plenty of evaluating. And if you are in the mix, or if you're hoping to be in the mix, let's be honest about this. I don't care who you're working for, or what you're doing. You're also watching this. You're watching what's going on here. You're looking at games and you're looking at the players in those games, because if you happen to be the person that gets the opportunity, then guess what? You're going to need to come in and hit the ground running. So it's not like you're just hoping to get the job and you're not paying any attention. Even if you're working with another team, on your own time, you're paying some attention and figuring out, you know, hey, if I get the chance, like, because you have to know, if I get an interview, if I'm going to sit down with somebody and talk about this, I have to be on the ball. I have to know what's going on. I have to have my plan constructed as to what I would do. And you can have a plan in general, but you're also going to want to have a plan that involves players that are on that team right now. You got to be able to come in and say, hey, this guy, I like this guy. I think this guy's got great potential. You know, this guy, I know he's got a lot of this, but I think we have two other guys that have a lot of that. I think we can move him for this piece that we need and these characteristics that we need, blah, 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 blah. You've got to be ready for that. So, look, all these people are paying attention to what is going on, because when the time comes, until the time comes that they get a call saying no thanks, until that time, they're paying a lot of attention because they're gathering information to be ready for when they get the opportunity to actually talk and try to put themselves in the best light for that position. So, again, I'm sure that's going to be a lot of chatter near the end of the season and at the end of the season as far as that GM position with the Blue Jackets. Again, getting ready to go on a 5-game road trip today over the course of the next 11 days. There are only 2 road trips left, and they are both long road trips, to which I say, thank goodness. Because the one-day trips are, I guess you could say they're convenient, but man, do they wear on you throughout the course of the season, where you're playing at home and then you're jumping on a plane and flying to Washington and playing there and flying back home. And then a day later, you're grabbing your bag and you're going to New York and you're playing one game and you're coming home and then you play a home game. And then the next day you're leaving and you're flying to Boston and you're playing a game. I mean, it's convenient that there are so many cities within close proximity, but sometimes it is just nice to go out and get that multi-game trip where you know you're going to be gone for a certain period of time and then you're going to come home for a certain period of time, right? So these last 2 road trips are both long ones. This one, 5 games. The next one is 4 games. Carolina, Tampa, Florida, and Nashville, I believe that one is. So that'll be nice as you're winding it down, and it'll be a challenge too, right? Especially this one, because here we go again. We're going to start in the Eastern time zone today, play in the Eastern time zone tomorrow, head to the Mountain time zone on Friday, then hit the Pacific time zone after that, and then come all the way back to the Eastern time zone and play. Like, it's silly. It's silly. It really is. But you look at the schedule, you see what's there, and you play the games they give you. And as I said, so it's going to be a challenge. And again, when you're an organization that's looking to evaluate a lot of things, you're looking to evaluate how players play against different levels of caliber on the other side. You've got this Detroit team that the Blue Jackets will take on tomorrow. They're just struggling to stay in the wild card chase right now. And that's not easy with the Eastern Conference wild card chase, because it is becoming pretty wide open at this point in time. Detroit's holding on to that final spot, but they lost yesterday in Pittsburgh, and they've got 74 points. They've got Washington and the New York Islanders both breathing down their necks with 73 points. You got Pittsburgh that is still in this conversation. Buffalo has gotten back in the conversation. They each have 69 points. The Devils, I think they're sinking and they don't have much of a chance. They'd have to jump over 5 teams here, but they've got 68 points. I mean, so, you know, they're 6 back, but you've got Detroit who's really trying to hold on to this spot right now, and the Blue Jackets could deal them a blow if they go in there and win tomorrow. So when you're looking to measure players and you're looking to, you know, evaluate, you're looking at how they're playing against, you know, teams like this that are fighting for a playoff spot. Then you're going to go to Colorado. That team's not fighting for a playoff spot. That team's fighting to win the Stanley Cup. So they dropped to 2nd place yesterday with the Jets' win, but the top 3 teams in the Central all have 91 points. Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas, they all have 91 points. So for Colorado, they're more of a juggernaut team, so you get the measure against that. Then you're going to Vegas, who is another team that's trying to hold on to the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. They bulked up at the trade deadline, so they're going to be a different team than the Blue Jackets played a couple of weeks ago prior to that trade deadline. Then you're going to go to Arizona, which is completely on a different end of the spectrum, because they they had some good runs this year, but they've dropped down, and you know, they can win games. I mean, they can come up with some big wins. They can surprise some people, but on the same token, not as good. And then you're going to go to Pittsburgh, another team that, as I said earlier, is hoping to keep themselves in the playoff conversation. But you're not only measuring the players about how they play against the different levels of competition and the different teams like that, but you're also going to be watching, like on this trip, where you know if you're one of the strength guys and conditioning guys, what are you watching here? Conditioning, right? Even though we're at the end of the year. That tells you something, too, that you can learn something at the beginning, you can learn something at the end. You're going to take all these days, spread over all these time zones. You evaluate every single thing, every piece of what is going on. That's what's going to happen here on this trip. So it should be interesting. One way or the other, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, hopefully the Blue Jackets can just relax and play some hockey. It's really what it's all about. Go in, take up the challenge of trying to, you know, screw up Detroit and what they're doing. Take up the challenge of trying to beat a team that could once again win the Stanley Cup, or two teams, Colorado and Vegas. Take up the challenge of going into that small rink in Arizona and, you know, knocking off the Coyotes. And then take up the challenge of trying to win in Pittsburgh for the first time in forever, which they haven't been able to do. So it'll be an interesting trip. The whole spectrum of this trip is going to be pretty interesting, I think. All right, let's go live to X Spaces right now. Troy is on board. Hello, Troy. How are you? Oh, Troy, you got to unmute. There you go. Are you there, Troy? Can't hear you. Don't have you. Don't know why. So let's, well, we can try it again and see if we can get Troy up here and talk to him and see what's on his mind. How about now? Let's see. Troy, there you go.
It's working now.
All right, there you go.
That was strange. That happens once in a blue moon.
Hey, it's a Monday, man. What do you expect? Everything to be perfect on a Monday? No, never is.
No, of course not. I was just checking out the upcoming free agents just to, like, you know, have some fun. And there are some free agents that on defense specifically, they're all in similar situations in terms of all of these players that I'm about to mention are on really good teams. And all of these teams that have these players currently have to re-sign a bunch of players. So in theory, I mean, it's possible with the cap going up that they can retain most of their free agents and big guys. But these teams that I'm about to mention, like Carolina and Florida and Vegas, like there's some players that are going to have to, like, not re-sign. So these are the names. And do you think any of these names excite you if they were to potentially wear a CBJ jersey? Okay. Number one, Brady Shea. Number two, Alec Martinez. Number three, Nikita Zadorov. Number four, Brandon Montour. How do you feel about those names?
Yeah, not great. I mean, let's see. Brady Shea, he's all right. But, I mean, here's the other thing you got to figure, Troy. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do here? You got Gudbranson with two more years, right?
Yeah.
You've got Severson for six. You've got Werenski for a boatload. You've got Provorov's going into the last year of his deal, so there could be an opening there. Jake Bean's a question mark to me because I had wondered how high they are on Jake Bean. When I was talking with Steve McCarthy yesterday, he couldn't say enough great things about Jake Bean, and Pascal Vincent alluded to that after the game against the Sharks on Saturday night when he said in his postgame press conference, "We don't talk about Jake Bean enough." But McCarthy raved about his hockey IQ and his intelligence and how he feels that he's still a young defenseman and that the sky's the limit for him. So that kind of gave me an indication of what at least the coaches think about Jake Bean. So Gudbranson, so let's just figure this way. They like him. They want him to be here. Okay. So you're locked into Gudbranson. You like Bean, so you got him here. You're locked into Werenski. You're locked into Severson. There's four. And you've got Provorov. that still has a deal. So if he's, you know, here in training camp, he's going to play. So that's five guys. And then you've got Boquist, who, again, he continues to struggle to stay healthy. I think he's been really good. I think he's been better than he has been in previous years when he's been healthy this year. So my point is, first of all, who's getting bumped out to bring one of those guys in? And, again, Brady Shea, he's an all right player, but does he knock my socks off as like a top defensive guy? No. Alec Martinez is old. Not that that's a terrible thing. Maybe you could use some experience, but, again, that's how I look at that. And then who were the other ones? Montour? And who was the other guy you said?
Zadorov.
Zadorov's big. He played with Gudbranson before. I mean, if you're looking to get bigger, and again, this might be what a new general manager decides. If you want to get bigger, especially back on the blue line, okay, that's something. I actually, with him, that jumps out to me more than some of the other guys. They're all good players. I'm thinking practically. You know, you already have these contracts, and here's the thing. This is what every team's going to deal with, right? There are some contracts you just have. Are you going to be able to move and create space for other guys? That's the question. And Werenski, Severson, Gudbranson, I mean, those three guys specifically, I can't see them going anywhere.
Yes, I agree with you. And the comment that you made about the coaches speaking highly of Jake Beam, in a lot of the post and pre-game press conferences, I have noticed they've always alluded to how hard he trains and those, like, goggles he wears and whatnot. And, like, obviously without these coaches and players, like, testifying for him doing that stuff, obviously none of us would know this. And that's, like, you know what I mean. That's, like, a intangible thing that's, like, in the locker room training. The other guys see this guy working his ass off before the game. They're like, oh, okay, like, maybe I should take this a little bit more seriously.
Here's what I think about Jake Beam. I'm going to say this, and you tell me if you agree with it or not. I think when Jake Beam makes a mistake, I feel that many of them are so egregious you cannot miss them, right? But with that being said, there are a lot of times he's invisible, and that's a compliment because that means he's doing what he has to do. He's been blocking a lot of shots lately too, and there's kind of like a different level to Jake's game right now. And maybe it is the whole there's a new boss coming. I got to be on top of my game here. I don't know. But I think that I think for the most part, he's a decent, solid guy. I just think the mistakes that he makes are so large they kind of stick in your mind for games on end. He doesn't make them every game, but if he makes one, it's so big it might stick with you for the next three games. And then if something else happens, then you just get the impression in your own mind this happens all the time. It really doesn't. It just seems like it. Because, like in Pittsburgh, he threw one right up the middle to absolutely nobody but the Penguins. And they came in. I forget if they scored a goal on it or if they really had a great scoring chance. And then he got healthy scratched in the next game. So that's what I think about him. I think for the most part, he's pretty good and he's pretty solid. Just some of the mistakes he makes are so big, it can fool us into thinking that he does it all the time when he doesn't.
I agree with that statement. And when his contract expires and we're getting to the point of renegotiating, it's the salary cap era. It's all about outperforming your AAV. I don't have too much issue with his skill. It's just, can the AAV be adjusted to where it seems that the organization is getting an advantage at right. the price they right. have him? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. And the other thing I'll say about the guys that you brought up, and I'm going to take Brady Shea out of this, but I think the Brandon Montours, the Alec Martinez's, those are guys, if you're going to be in the playoffs, then I think you go out and get those kind of guys. I am not sold. I hope I'm wrong. I'm not sold this team is going to be in the playoffs again next year. I think there's still some building here to do. So that's another reason I hedge on a couple of those guys for what you would have to pay them, for what they bring. If you're in the playoffs and you know it going into training camp, then that's one thing. If you are still building, you know, you also got to watch how much money you start paying out to, you know, guys that are a little bit longer in the tooth, too.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because besides Montour, like, a lot of those players are pretty easy to fill in on a playoff contending side, because it's like, okay, like, you've proven you've played 20-plus minutes every night, can block a ton of shots, and are just, like, can kill penalties and do all the dirty work, you know? And, like, if the Blue Jackets' future general manager acquires one of those players and takes a risk by acquiring one of those players and they don't get in the playoffs quickly, A, it, in like, put their value down from what it was because they're on a not playoff contending team. And B, it's just like, it makes this, like, I hate to say this term, but like the truth of the matter is like Provorov was acquired because of the length of his contract. And like, it's perceived as like a stopgap until the prospects come up. And if you acquire one of those defensemen and they don't get into the playoffs quick, you're just taking away another spot from a prospect.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and you can flip those kind of guys at the trade deadline, which may happen to Provorov. Well, I guess technically could happen in the summer with 1 year left on his deal, or it could happen at the trade deadline next year. But, you know, when you talk about prospects there, and I'm counting these defensemen, Denton Mateychuk is going to be part of this. David Yurchek is going to be part of this. Is it going to be next year or not? I don't know. But I'll tell you this, Troy, now that you got into contract talk and all this stuff, now we're in trouble because Lester wants to come on the show, and you know he's got this whole broken down.
He's my favorite guest.
Yeah, we're gonna learn something. You and I are both gonna learn something in a minute, I think. Whether it's something you can use beyond 5 minutes from now or not, I'm not sure, but we'll learn something.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Troy. I appreciate it. Oh my goodness. Well, let's see. I know that you know, when I say that. When I say we're going to learn something, I put a lot of pressure on, but I know Lester can handle the pressure. How are you, sir?
I'm not doing too bad. I'm not going to get too overboard with this, Bob, because I agree with a lot of the things you're saying. I don't see a playoff team out there on the ice next year either. And what really, it's hard for me to guess what might happen or what's going to happen without knowing who the new general manager is and what his philosophy might be going forward. Does he see the team as being way far from where they want to be? Or does he think they're close? Would he be the kind of guy that would make a trade that would really kind of, I don't want to say shake things up, but change the perception of the team? I mean, you look at the Florida Panthers, they were kind of struggling, couldn't get into the playoffs. And then they got and they make the trade where they bring in Tkachuk, and they got rid of a couple of guys they liked in Uyghur and Huberdeau. And that trade has radically changed the Florida Panthers. Now, I know the Blue Jackets aren't maybe as close or have the pieces that the Panthers have, but I could also see the new general manager, you know, it just depends on what his philosophy is. As you look at the coaching staff and say, look, you know, my job security is predicated on winning. Are these the coaches I want, or do I want to bring in my own guys? He's going to do some stuff once he gets in there and he sees what he has and the pieces he has to work with. So it's really kind of hard to speculate. I do know this. We've got some big contracts like Line A and Werenski and Gaudreau. And some of them are long-term, like Severson, and he's going to have to be creative in how he deals with those. If he can move a couple of contracts, and I'm not being mean to him, but like Elvis, he's really going to get my respect right away.
Yeah, well, you're right. It is hard to speculate on what might happen here when you don't know who's going to be running the show and what their thought process is, right? But yeah, you're absolutely right, and you hit on a couple of contracts, and you know, Elvis is one that's been talked about all year. You know, Patrick Laine was starting to be talked about a little bit until he went into the assistance program. And so, you know, he's not allowed near the team and he's not ready to play and all of that. So how is that whole thing going to shake out? But, you know, I do agree with you there. And those are two contracts in particular that somebody could come in and try to move. And that could be kind of your shakeup right there. And, you know, I don't want to harp on Patrick. I'm not putting him down here, but this team has continually gotten better throughout the course of the year without him being here. Which, and I'm not saying, well, then just get him out, get rid of him. But I'm saying, as you evaluate and you look, those are some of the things that I think you have to take into account if you're a new general manager. When you're talking about making a shakeup kind of a trade, yeah, those contracts, if you can find a way to do it and find a way to make it work for you. I think you're absolutely right. I think the people that you mentioned kind of fall into the category where they at least get looked at.
Well, what you're kind of saying without saying it, and it's correct, the team has gotten used to playing without him.
Yeah, yeah, that's well put, yeah. They have, and they're, you know, and I think when you get a guy like that, I think everybody's guilty whether they say it or they don't say it. You know what he's done in the past, and you just expect him to do it. So everybody's waiting for him to do it, and there's people standing around going, well, I know it's going to happen, so we'll just wait for it. And then when you don't have that kind of weapon in your arsenal, then you just go, well, I've got to do it. I can't wait for anybody else to do it. I have to do it. And I think that's kind of where how they've come along throughout the course of the year. There are more guys that are saying that I'm just going to do it rather than sit and wait for, you know, a real potential superstar to go out and do it. They don't feel like they have that right now, and everybody can be a superstar just by getting the job done.
Yeah, I'll say one last thing, kind of let you go here. I hope that they play better in the last 14 games than they did this weekend. This weekend was hard to watch. Last night, right off the jump, the opening faceoff, Gaunce wins it, and the puck goes back in a little area where there's four Blue Jackets there, and they kind of pause. They look at each other like, who's going to take the puck? And Lowry dashed in there and grabbed it, and all of a sudden Winnipeg has the puck. And they just weren't moving their legs at all last night. And, you know, you would say, well, it was a back-to-back or whatever, but you get that all the time in the NHL. This is the last 14 games, 13 of the teams they play are either in the playoffs fighting for a position or trying to get into the playoffs. Arizona's the lone exception, and they've got to be a lot more aggressive, and they've got to be moving those legs, because I don't want to see this season end bad, because they still haven't topped last year's win total or last year's point total.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that, and you're right. That's a good observation, that very first faceoff. And that was very telling. Now we go back with hindsight being 2020, right? It was very telling as far as what the Winnipeg Jets thought about that game, the importance of them playing well and winning that game. Because when Adam Lowry makes that play, that tells you right now they came to play. They're not horsing around, right? They're going after pucks, and they just continued to do it all night long. And you know, even the Saturday game, you win the Saturday game. I'm gonna ask you this, Lester, because you have a good vision on things here. You know, after the game, they're talking about how, you know, they didn't play well in the third period and this and that. And I know the Blue Jackets are in last place in the East. I get it. Before I say this, I understand that. But I think sometimes you also play down to your competition, and playing against the San Jose team who had a lot of names on there that you've never even seen before. I mean, they're bottom of the barrel, dead last in a full rebuild, that team. And, you know, I think when it got to 3-1, the Blue Jackets kind of felt like, okay, this is over. We got it. And then San Jose went, no, it's not over. And they brought it back to a 3-2 game. I think they were a little bit guilty in that game of thinking that this was going to be a pushover opponent.
I agree with what you're saying. It seemed like they quit playing when it got to 3-1. And it's also, if you think back over the course of the season, I mean, they lost to Anaheim at home. They've had some games where they played to the level of the competition. On the other hand, they played their rear ends off when they played the Rangers, when Vegas came in here, you know, Edmonton. I mean, they played very hard at Toronto, beat them twice. You definitely have hit on something there. They've kind of risen or stooped to the level of their competition all year long. But this team is radically different in the last 10 days to 2 weeks, because Roslovic was traded away and three or four guys have gone down with injuries, and all of a sudden you got a lot of Cleveland monsters out there. And like I said, there's some guys that are going to have to pick up the slack and say, okay, I'm in the NHL. I got to play like an NHLer.
Yeah, you're right. And sometimes that's a kind of a smack in the face, a game like yesterday, you know what I mean? Where it's a harsh reminder of how hard it is to play here and have success here individually and as a team, day in and day out.
Yeah, quickly, one last thing. Last week, somebody asked you, they said, you know, they talked about guys that restricted free agents. Who would you extend?
Yeah.
And I think you said, if I remember right, Sillinger, Johnson, and I think Shinnikov.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, if I had to extend three, I agree with Shinnikov and Sillinger, but I would probably go with Voronkov instead of Johnson. Johnson's got to show me a little bit more yet. I'm not totally sold on him. I know he was a very high draft pick, but I look at Voronkov, and he plays so strong in front of the net, both ends, that I got a guy in Boone Jenner who's 31. He's got 2 years left on his contract. The last 3 years, both he and Werenski have finished the season on the injured list, and I hope they both make it to the end this year. But I would want a guy that I knew could play strong in front of the net, and if Boone were to go down or if he were to move on at the end of his contract, I want to know that I got a guy there that I can plant in front of the goalie who's going to do what I want him to do.
Right, but Voronkov just came over.
Yeah.
Right, so that's a no-brainer. I figure he's staying here. But and I understand what you're saying about Kent Johnson, but still a fifth overall pick with the kind of skill that he has. You know, when you were talking about a GM maybe trying to make an impactful deal to change things, what popped into my head, like you were talking about Jonathan Huberdeau. How many Florida Panthers fans thought that Jonathan Huberdeau, the way he played the year prior to him getting traded, who would have thought that he was ever going to be on the block to go somewhere, right? And yeah. And then they trade him and they get Tkachuk, and it's a miraculous deal. I mean, it's a great deal, fantastic deal. Kent Johnson's got, he doesn't have the numbers that Huberdeau does. He's not going to be able to command, you know, the return on his own, but he is a big skill player that I'm sure a lot of teams would be interested in if you feel that you need to move a skill piece to get something else. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not wishing it's going right. to happen, but we're just, again, not knowing who the person is going to be. You can throw a lot of stuff on the wall and see what sticks, but in those situations you were talking about, I think that's fair to keep in the back of your mind.
I understand we're going to take our time and get this GM choice right thing, but I wish that they could have gotten him in sooner. Maybe they would have moved away from Yarmo sooner just simply because, and we all agree Yarmo's fault was he couldn't build a roster. So that's the thing. They got a guy that's going to come in and want to build a roster. I wish they got somebody a little sooner so he could have watched these guys play live and done an evaluation instead of just sitting there watching the film.
Well, hold on a second, though. In all fairness, you don't know who the person's going to be. They very well may be watching these players live. You don't see a lot of general managers that are in the buildings. You do see a lot of assistant general managers that are in buildings. So you don't know. They may have seen them play live more than you think.
Yeah, you could be right about that. Just like last week, somebody was talking about Yarmo maybe still working for the team as he's under contract because he was going up scouting the Monsters. I don't really see that. He's just doing his due diligence because he plans to have a job in the league again in about another year, and he can't just take a year off and not scout or go out and evaluate players. If he goes and gets another job somewhere, like say he goes to Buffalo or something, he wants to hit the ground running.
Yeah, that's true. And the other truth is he's still getting paid. So,
right. I mean,
you know, it's not, I guess it's kind of weird, but it's not a weird thing if he goes up there and watches that. But you're right. Yes. You always want to be in tune with what's going on. You can't, you cannot be complacent and fall out of it even for a short period of time. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to roll here and you have a good time sitting amongst the fans when you get to Arizona.
I will. But first I've got to go up there and, still, I've got like an hour to go figure out what else I need to pack and what I forgot, and I still won't figure out what I forgot until I get to where we're going. So that'll be fun.
Now you ought to make a list.
I did, a mental list. That's why I lost it. Thank you, Lester. I appreciate it. Yep. Talk to you next week.
Have a good week.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Yeah, next week I'll be doing this from Arizona. Yes, we'll be in the desert next week for the Monday mailbag. So there will already be, three games that have been played. We will have played in Detroit, Colorado, and Vegas by the time the next Monday mailbag comes your way. So thanks for joining me. Thanks for being there. And look, a lot of you are there listening. I can see you. And you don't have to ask a question. I'm just glad to have you aboard and those of you that come on and be a part of it, whether by sending your questions to me on X at Bobby Mac Sports or by coming on live on X Spaces. I appreciate you too. The Blue Jackets will be at Detroit tomorrow night, 7 o'clock face-off tomorrow evening, 6:30 pregame coverage on the Blue Jackets Radio Network. And tomorrow, the Buckeyes are playing in the NIT, so tomorrow we'll be on Columbus Alternative 105.7 in Columbus and then elsewhere throughout the state on the radio network and also 6:30 pregame on Bally Sports. Blue Jackets and the Red Wings tomorrow night from Detroit. Until then, I'm Bob McKelligan saying so long.